感谢您下载 To the East My Brother Podcast 的内容。Thanks for downloading the To the East My Brother Podcast.
Hey folks, welcome back to the podcast. To the East My Brother, I am your host Colin. Folks, today is the, well I should say, this episode is the final in our three-part series on doing business in China. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback on the first two episodes. I hope you guys enjoy the third one just as much. I'm quite confident you will, because in this, our third and final installation of our three-part series on doing business in China, we talk with Ms. Byron A. Richards, who is the owner of a, I don't want to say a African-American salon in Shanghai. She is the owner of a salon in Shanghai. And as you listen to the podcast, you understand why it's important to make that distinction. And I'll give you a hint. The bottom line is we're in China. And if you're in China opening a business, you always want to cater to the larger market. So this one is a great interview. And I have a little personal stake here, truly, because as a African-American, as a black man who needs a haircut every two and a half weeks in a city where it is literally impossible to find a barber that can cut my hair. Not my hair, just any black guy's hair. We finally have an outlet in Ms. Richards' shop. So I'm very, very, after 6 years, I'm very, very excited that we now have this outlet. Okay, so in this interview, Byron really shares with us, you know, what got her started into the salon business. She was not classically trained. She also talks about the key factors in being able to establish a business, regardless of who you're marketing to. You have to have a very strong relationship with the local people. You have to do your due diligence, or as we like to say, you must do your research, and you must really understand how to attract and retain a new target market. Once again, although her shop specializes in doing the hair for blacks, black people, they absolutely must go for a wider demographic. So enjoy the interview, all right, folks? Now, before we get into that, a couple of things that I do want to address here as well. Thank you once again for your feedback. I appreciate the feedback you've given me as to some ideas you have for topics. Also, some issues you're having with the website. So I have all those, and I am getting back on top of making sure that you guys can do two things. You can download as you wish, or you can listen to the streaming audio online. Now, we are now on Facebook, folks. Yes, we are now on Facebook. What I need you to do is go to Facebook, do a search for To the East, My Brother. When you find me, like me, okay? It's that simple. Go to Facebook, find me, then like me. That'll let me know that you like the podcast, all right? Other things, we have some very good topics coming down the pike. We will be getting back to some of our more, I guess you can say, fun topics. Although I did enjoy talking about business and development, we will get back to some of our more fun topics. I think in the next month, we'll definitely hear some fun facts and headlines about China. Some of the things that I read in newspaper that I find to be very, very, what's what I want to say? Very, very interesting. Not saying funny, not saying strange, just saying very, very interesting. I think you guys will get a kick out of those. We're going to talk about the upcoming spring sports season here in China as well. What other sports do we have here as foreigners to play? And how you can get involved in some of these sports as well. And finally, we will talk about dating in China. I think I told you in a previous podcast that I've gotten too many requests to talk about this topic. So I will be finding some people to interview, because I do not want to share my personal views on this topic or my experience. So we'll find some folks and we'll give you two distinct views. Two distinct views. Dating in China from a female perspective, that's foreign female and local Chinese female, and from a male perspective, once again, that's foreign male and local Chinese male. So look for those down the pike. Okay, folks, I hope all of you are having a great 2014 thus far. Colin Thompson saying peace. Thank you for taking the time to download the podcast. Thank you for taking the time to find me on Facebook and like me. Okay, folks, here is part three of doing business in China. Enjoy. Hey, folks, welcome back to the podcast. Today, I gotta say, folks, I am very excited. Well, let me start off by saying thank you for taking the time to download the podcast. This is part three of our three-part series, Doing Business in China. And I gotta say, folks, today I am very, very excited on a personal side. As I said, folks, I have a personal stake in today's interview. The first one goes back to roots. We both, myself and Ms. Byron A. Richards, the owner of Studio Ebony here in Shanghai, we both have roots in Jamaica, right? So this is our first interview with the true Jamaican. Also, as you probably can figure out by the name of her business, Studio Ebony, Ms. Richards is the owner, proprietor, manager, everything in her own newly opened salon. And as a brother here in Shanghai who has not been able to get a haircut, folks, I've been in China 6 years. I've had haircuts from a barber 5 times in China in 6 years. So I have a stake to build her business up, pump her business up, so we can have a full-time barber here so I can have a good-looking hairstyle and feel confident. Anyway, enough about me. Ms. Richards, please introduce yourself.
Thanks, Colin. I'm Bryony Richards, and as you mentioned before, I hail from the beautiful island Jamaica. Yeah. But I didn't move to Shanghai from Jamaica. Hardly no one moves directly from Jamaica to Shanghai. So I definitely moved here from the U.S. There I was studying. I was doing my MBA in international business with a focus on the Chinese economy. And in the middle of my studies, we had an exchange program with Peking University. And after that, I decided to stay in Shanghai after our exchange program. So I've been in China for 4.5 years, been in Shanghai for that entire time too.
And the focus of today's interview, as you heard from my first part one and part two, part one where we talked to Allison Bolton, we focused really on how to attract that middle class with a product that Chinese know, but they don't really, really know, which is wine. My second part two was talking to the owner of the Oyster House, where he was talking about how to market a product that is somewhat unknown to the Chinese market here in China. And for you, you go a different route because your shop is literally in the heart of Shanghai, and you are marketing to a very small niche of people in Shanghai, which are most African Americans, Africans. People of African descent, black people, basically, right?
Yes.
So where did you get the concept, the idea? Because your background is not in
cosmetology.
No.
Right.
So first, take us through when you arrived in China and what helped you decide to... how did you recognize there is a need here for this business?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you also said previously, you have been in China for 6 years, but have only been able to have a barber cut your hair 5 times. I've been in China for 4.5 years, and before that, I've never had my hair done by a stylist because there was no stylist. Mm. So from arriving in China, I was like, we need a hair salon. And I've heard everyone say the same thing over and over, we need a salon. But for the 3 years, no one did anything about it. So pretty much in my initial stages of coming to China, I had the intention of doing a business in China, putting my MBA to use, you know, the MBA student doing what we do in class, you know, putting it to making it practical. So I worked in corporate for 3 years and I decided, hey, I've been here for 3 years. I haven't done what I said I was going to do. If I don't start something of my own, it's time to return home. And I said, okay. I didn't re-sign my contract. And then I decided, what can I do? The need was still there for a stylist for a hair salon. So I decided to open the hair salon to meet that need.
So for folks who don't know contracts, a lot of times in China, when you work, you sign a contract for a number of years. So when you decided not to re-up, had you already decided you were going to open your shop?
I didn't decide what I was going to do. I just decided I needed to do something of my own, or I needed to return home.
So you made sure you had no
alternative. Yes.
Wonderful. And folks, you know, just so you guys can understand what we're saying here, because this may seem odd to a lot of people about why we both could not get our hair done. The hair of black people is different from your typical Caucasian or Asian. If you know, Caucasian and Asians have the same, similar grain of hair. So barbers can cut both types of hair. However, with black people, our hair is... How would you describe black people?
Well, the first thing that you describe about black people, our hair are so different because you have different texture, different curl level, different length. Everything is just really different from Caucasian or Asian hair. So pretty much the person must know how to style the hair to give it that look that we're accustomed to.
Right.
So if you're not accustomed to working with curly hair, you can't cut it, you can't style it.
So, you know, the thing about that, another way to look at that is, if you think about how you feel after you got a good haircut or you went to the stylist, right, you feel taller, you feel much more confident. I know for us brothers, right? You give us a good haircut, we can do anything in the world. So this is one of the, this is why always on the minds of people here in Shanghai. Whenever I see a brothers, right, we always look at each other's hair and say, okay, you just got back from the U.S. because they got a good haircut and a good hairline. Okay, so that's some background as to why this is important. So continue to give us your timeline. You said that after you, well, you didn't resign your contract, right? What year was that?
It was my third year.
Your third year, what year?
2012.
12, okay. So take it from 2012 to now.
So 2012, didn't resign my contract. The good thing, though, I work, my corporate was corporate restructuring in the Chinese market and assisting foreign companies to set up their organization in China. So I already had the contacts of how to register a company. So people would be like, how did you start your own company? Isn't it hard? And I would tell them, no, the easiest part of all this was for me to register my company and have a legitimate company because I already had all the relationships and the contacts in my back pocket. It was just an email or a phone call away. So that was the easy part. So I knew I could start a company in whatever area, so I needed to decide what area. Again, the same thing kept repeating. No establishment to do her hair. So I decided to do my market research. And when I did my market research, I realized it's actually the probability of being successful was strong. One, my research showed that the hair industry, the black hair industry globally is a $9 billion market. And 80% of all hair care products bought throughout the entire world was bought by the African market.
Really?
Yes.
Probably perm.
Exactly. No, the fake hair.
Don't get me started. Anyway.
But so that was a big plus. And then my research also showed that there were over 60,000 African descent persons living in Shanghai. So that showed me there was
really?
A market. Yes.
60,000?
60,000.
Where are they? Seriously.
Wow. Remember, Shanghai is spread out.
Yeah,
it's really big. And a lot of these, a lot of this subset, they are actually in universities throughout the schools.
Okay.
So, and a lot of them are undocumented too.
Right, okay.
So research showed that the market was there, the potential was there, and I can actually register the company. So I decided to do it. And one of the main things of doing business in China, elsewhere, but crucial in China, is relationships.
Right.
And I had spoken to a friend about my idea. And she said, oh, I know a stylist and he's closed 5 days a week. Let's talk to him about renting his shop for 2 days a week. So that gave me the idea, oh, that would be great because I can use the 2 days to understand the market, understand what is needed, what the demands are, what the preferences are, and how to actually get the products into the country. So that's what we did. We operated for 2 days for 9 months.
2 days for 9 months.
And then build our clientele and understood our clientele.
Okay, a couple of questions. What other, you said earlier that the theme of the salon kept coming back to you. What other ideas did you think about doing, right, during that time? And were you still somewhat, you know, I assume you had to be nervous about actually going for it. I assume your parents back home are like, what are you doing? Keep your corporate job or just do this on the side?
Well, my parents didn't say that. They know I'm crazy. I'm always the adventurous type. I usually jump first and ask questions later. So there were three things on the table. Tourism, a Caribbean Development Center, and a tourism company, because I do travel tours on the side. So I was going to look into developing that for full time. The Caribbean Business Center, I pitched that to a Chinese investor, and let's say that they are now developing that.
Oh, time out. Because we hear about this a lot when you're doing business with Chinese in China. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you're going into a partnership, and they must own the business, so to speak. Once they learn your business, they sort of push you out. Or if you hire good managers, once they learn the business, they go elsewhere and duplicate that. Mm-hmm. So you actually had for the Caribbean
business center,
mm-hmm. right? You had the idea and you pitched it. They took it and ran with it.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. So it should be open in Beijing soon.
Wow. Wow, so I take it the relationship there is not too good right now.
No.
Okay, so you talked earlier about market research, right? Now, I know what market research is, so do you, but can you give my audience an idea of some of the market research that you did? Because I know in the U.S., if I want to learn about the market, I can go online and find information very, very quickly. I assume it's a little different here in Shanghai, no?
Way different. There's nothing online, especially about the Caribbean community or the Black community, because we have never been really researched or focused of any development. So pretty much the way it was more hands-on, going to the embassies, talking to people who have been here for 15 years, going to the schools, getting the data, going to the embassies would be able to, they basically told me how many students came over on scholarship, how many persons registered.
Okay.
So those were the ways in which I went about. Then you could also go through the church look at the statistics there, how many persons from which country are registered. Yes, you do.
I guess you should have to keep that. So mm-hmm. can you take us from your shop 2 days, open 2 days a week, to where you are now?
It seems like many, many moons ago when I was so young and innocent. But it has been a challenging ride, very bumpy, but I enjoyed every single second of it. I must say the most challenging part is not starting the company, not building the relationship. The most difficult part is dealing with the Chinese government and the laws and regulations.
Still,
they change the regulations and the rules at a drop of a hat. They make it very difficult for foreigners to do business or just people to do business in China.
Can you give us an example of one of the regulations that affects you? Regulations change that affect you.
In terms of employment, getting visas for your employees.
Okay.
At first, it was, you could have flown over to Hong Kong, do your visa, whatever. My stylist, I actually found an agent who can still do it in Hong Kong. So I was confident that one of my stylists from Kenya would have been able to do it. But no, because they are still racist against certain countries. So they're like, she's from Kenya. No. So the government issued a letter that she has to go back to Kenya to get her visa. And she had to leave within 5 days. Within the Chinese New Year. So imagine the cost of that ticket.
Wow.
So that's one of the rules and a regulation that really affects in terms of registering your company, licensing your company for doing what you actually want to do. That's also a hassle.
Yeah, you know, I recall when I was working in Shenzhen, a Japanese colleague of mine, he was probably about 62, right? And he had retired from IBM in Japan and came to China to work, have a more relaxed job. And the government told him, you know what? You're too old.
Yeah.
You got to get out of here in 1 week.
Yeah.
1 week, mm-hmm. right? Imagine that.
Yeah.
Right? Very, very disruptive. So going back to your stylist, right? How do you go about finding and retaining your stylist? I ask because the talent to do here isn't so common. And typically in order to do it for Black people, you're also Black. Black people, despite the fact we have 60,000 Black people here in Shanghai, it doesn't feel like that, right?
That's
I know when they come here, they may feel a little bit odd. I got to assume, to use an example, Kenya and Shanghai, similar, but very, very different, right?
Right.
Very different. So, you know, how do you go about finding and retaining your stylist?
Well, I've been lucky. So I can answer your question in two parts because I've been in a situation where I've been able to recruit someone from China and then the others from the US. So I have a local recruit and I have international recruits. And the local recruit, that's much easier because they already understand the culture. They don't really get crazy when things don't go as expected because they've lived it.
Right.
So the local recruit, that was easy. in terms of the international recruit, then that was, it was really, really difficult. And it actually caused problem with one of my stylists to the fact, to the extent that she returned home. Mm-hmm. She was not accustomed to the culture. Her level of expectation was really way different than what she had come accustomed to back in the US. For example, products, something simple as products. She expects she can go around the corner and get a product, but all our products are imported, which take at least 2 weeks to get here from.
Once you've established a pipeline, too.
Right. Once you've established a pipeline, because way back when I just started, that took like 6 weeks to 2 months to get here. So now it's like 15 to 20 days.
Not too bad.
Right, not too bad. But she was of a different mindset and just everything. She could not live with all the differences.
Yeah, you know, I remember her, and I'll tell you why I remember her. Because she was the only stylist who cut hair. So I had, I think I burned a camera for her when she left. Okay, so most of these stylists are local, were here already.
Well, the others were international, but they were okay. And yeah, they're okay. The process of getting them in, it's okay. The visa process, it's okay. It's the process of ensuring that the salon is at a standard. It's not even the salon or the products. It's about the process of getting their visa and the process of getting an apartment and the process of the transportation and the food and the expectation. Okay. It's not even the salon per se.
Right.
It's the life.
So I know that a lot of, you can tell me this. I don't know if it's mandatory, but I know a lot of Chinese companies, I guess state-owned, maybe not even state-owned, but they have to provide housing for the employees.
Mm-hmm.
One, they have to hire X amount of Chinese. And they have to provide housing and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
As an owner, do you have to do those things?
Well, no, we don't have to. But we do have to employ a certain amount of Chinese to expats. Unless you know how to get around it.
Say that again?
You have to hire a certain amount of Chinese to expats in your company.
Okay.
Unless you know how to get around it.
Okay. Well, I see a Chinese gentleman in your shop now cleaning up, so I assume you're following all the policies.
Yes.
So how many stylists do you have now?
We have five.
Five stylists.
On the weekend, we have up to five persons working here.
Okay. So let me go back into something you raised a moment ago. Most of your products are not common or even available in Shanghai or China.
All of them.
How do you go about ensuring that you have safe products that your company, your clients can trust? Because I know that, you know, my China, I may look black, but I'm really Shanghainese, right? I spent 4 years there, and I've learned that everything in the world can be copied, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you ensure that you're getting the real products here? I know a lot of owners will opt to go to a discount one that on paper does the same thing, right? But may damage somebody's hair.
Right. For me, every single product we use in the salon is imported. So I import directly from the distributor or directly from the manufacturer in the U.S.
How do you set your prices? Because I assume if you're importing everything, you're starting at a higher price break, right?
Well, because we're starting out, I just really set the price in comparable to what the stylists charge in the US. So at this time, we're just trying to build our reputation and make our name out there. But yeah, if you check with other expat salons, the price tend to be higher than our prices.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But okay, I find that surprising because if you say you're same prices as the US, you know, I've never been to a salon in the US, I'm a guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would assume that the women's prices are high there. So to have that same price here would seem a little high for the cost of living here.
Right.
Okay.
But it can't be lower because I'm using the same products
right.
and I'm importing
yeah.
it.
So yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Now, I want to talk a moment about your customers. Your target market initially were black people, right?
Yes.
Now, you do a very good job of using social media to market, right? I always get your ratings about there'll be an eyebrow specialist here, there'll be a barber here, things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I also saw some pictures of some Chinese guys getting their hair twisted.
Mm-hmm.
So have you got, how do you actually market towards your customers? What marketing technique have you found is the best or the most effective? And have you gotten customers that you did not anticipate getting in the first place?
Okay. Well, to answer your first question, the marketing technique that works the best because of our niche is word of mouth. Can't beat word of mouth. If someone, especially a woman, black woman coming, or a guy, like, oh my God, I found a salon and they use the product I used to use at home, and the stylist is knowledgeable.
Right.
That's the biggest sell. The second and most surprising is Smart Shanghai. Okay. If it's not word of mouth, it's Smart Shanghai. So a lot of persons find our, so again, social media, Smart Shanghai.
So what is Smart Shanghai?
Smart Shanghai is an expat website in Shanghai, and you can find out everything you need to know about Shanghai, places to go, places to eat, salons.
Place to get your hair done.
Yes.
Right. Now, what about the customer that you did not expect to get?
Well, I did expect to get Caucasian and Asian, and that was always in the back of my mind. Yeah, that was always my target, because I knew servicing a niche market would get me to this level of success and no more, because your subset is that small.
Right.
So my intention was always to get Asian clients in. And I knew that we would actually have footprint in the market, because you have the Asian there, especially in Shanghai, looking for something new, looking for something cool. And if you notice about Chinese, because their hair is the same, their face is generally similar, so they're always looking for a way of setting themselves apart from the crowd.
Right.
And I know that the African style would be something that they would be interested in. Point, I have this client, and he's so cute. He's like, he came, he texted me on WeChat, because one of his friends, who he plays basketball with, who's an African-American, he gets his hair cornrowed here. So he introduced him to us. And he was like, everybody has a big dream in their life, and my biggest dream is to have cornrows like Allen Iverson.
I saw that picture. Or the guy, I saw the picture.
And he actually broke up with his girlfriend because the girlfriend wanted him to cut his hair.
Really?
And he's like, no, I want my hair to grow like Allen Iverson and have cornrows.
You heard it there, folks. So all you boys, men out there who want to find a way to get rid of your girlfriends, come on down to Studio Ebony and we'll take care of you.
No. But that's true. It's true. It's like, I broke up with her because she didn't like my cornrows.
Have you had a lot of Chinese women in here getting their hair done as well? And are they going for a regular haircut? Are they going for something more exotic?
Well, we don't cater for regular hairstyles for Asian because we cannot beat the prices that local salon. So everyone who comes here, it's more African-oriented hairstyles. So they get the braids and stuff, locks.
Okay.
And we, not a large, as large as I would hope, but I have definitely seen an increase.
Mm.
Positive increase.
Now, what about Caucasians? Same thing?
Caucasians, a lot of expat salons, so what we focus on is extensions.
What are the difference between weave, braids, extensions? What's the difference?
Okay. Braids are like singles, where you use synthetic hair to attach singles. Like, it could be twisted or plaited. Weaves are the one that it's on a weft and it's sewn in. Extensions are more like microlinks or keratin tips that is attached by a machine and strings to your hair. So the difference between the weave and the extension is that the extensions is a little bit lighter. So when you have lighter Caucasian hair, it looks a little bit more natural. Where for our Afro hair, it's thicker, so you can get the sew-in and it still looks natural.
Okay. What relationships have you developed with local Chinese as it relates to any aspect of your business that you did not anticipate?
Well, the key to anything in China is relationship. As I said before, and it's really crucial. One of the unexpected one is how I found this salon, this new salon space. I used to be across, which is number 11. Right. Now we're at number 14.
Right.
We didn't have a microwave. And I used to bring lunch sometimes. And I used to walk over to the previous owners and ask them if I could use their microwave.
Okay.
Everybody in the shop thought I was crazy. How can you go to your neighbor to borrow it? That's just not done in America. And I used to die. In the back of my mind, I'm like, don't worry about it. It's my way of forming relationship,
getting
to know persons. Right. But they didn't understand where I'm coming from. But in the back of my mind, I know what I was doing.
Right.
And it so happened, which I didn't anticipate, is I got the salon space here at the same price that they were renting, and it was a Chinese rent, not the expat. And how I got that, I came over one day to microwave my lunch and I saw them packing. And I said to her, are you guys moving? And you're like, yes, the girl who works here. And I was like, oh, could I rent the place? And she actually went to her boss and told her that she likes me. I'm a nice person. Can he rent the place to me? And he was like, yeah, sure. And it so happened the same guy who I shared the space with, who is white Caucasian, right. You know, they really like, you know, Caucasians. He inquired about the space and they didn't even reply to him.
Really?
Because he was already told I'm a nice person.
Wow.
And had already developed the relationship. And he was able, he had a year left on the contract and he told the landlord to give me his year at his price.
Wow.
So that's how important relationship
yes.
is. So I didn't even have to pay agency fee, nothing.
Right.
So it was really, really nice.
So one thing you mentioned there, you mentioned about the local rate
mm-hmm.
and the foreigner rate. Oh. Give us more about that. Now, I know what that means. And when I'm out shopping somewhere where there's not a set price, I know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that it applied to rents also.
Of course, it applies to everything. You have the expat rate, which is the law, and we endearingly call it the Lawai tax.
The Lawai tax, right?
So you do it for everything. I mean, a landlord sees a foreigner, they automatically assume that we get more money than a local person.
Right.
So it's their right to get as much as they can from us.
You see, I always heard that landlords want to rent to foreigners because they take better. Take better care of the property. I guess the money gives them a cushion.
It does.
Wow.
And it's more the educated Chinese, not the local. Because the local Chinese, they fear that they cannot relate to you. They cannot communicate with you. And you may have intention of leaving without paying. Because you're not a Chinese.
Okay,
so the educated like it, but the locals don't.
I want to go back and I want to talk more about your experience here in China. So you mentioned before you were studying in the U.S. and getting your MBA, international business, with a focus on China, Chinese
economy.
Okay. So before you arrived in China, what were your expectations?
Well, I had a healthy expectation and realistic expectation because I did my research on China and that's how I ended up doing my focus on the Chinese economy, because I was poised to graduate during the height of the financial crisis during the US 2009 when everything was crashing. And I said to myself, well, you move directly from an undergraduate to a master's, no corporate experience in between. They're firing managers left, right, and
right.
center. Who's going to apply? Who's going to employ a new graduate with no experience with an MBA? So I did my research, and in my research, everything that popped up was China, 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 China. So I went to my supervisor and actually tailored, suggested that we do a focus on the Chinese economy,
okay.
and they put it in the curriculum.
So you were the first student to graduate with a focus in Chinese
economy. Well, not first student, but first subset.
Subset, okay.
Because they were currently doing Paris, Germany, and I think Australia. And I said to them, why aren't you doing China? I mean, did my research, it's up and coming. They're like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. So we actually had 16 persons in our subset, because 16 of us came to China, but I was the only crazy one who stayed behind. And
really? Time out. Yes. So you guys interned here?
Yes, I applied for an internship in China before I even left the U.S. and got a scholarship from my university to pay for the ticket and the internship in China.
Okay.
And then I asked my supervisor when I was back in the U.S., can I complete my thesis and email it in? And they said yes. So everything was agreed upon that I would stay in China instead of returning.
So, okay, a couple things here. One, when you came to China, it was for, I assume, 3 to 6 months. And here you are over 4 years.
Okay.
Once again, we don't call it crazy, we call it bold. Also, you mentioned that, 16 of you came, 15 of you left.
Yes.
Right. So why did 15 leave and why did one stay?
Well, also,
I know why one stayed. I know, we know that story, right? But why did 15 leave?
Well, I don't know. They probably didn't see the opportunity that I saw.
Well, that's a great answer, right? Because I look at, like, people who are driven, who have an idea, can walk into a room and they can walk into an empty room or a filled room and see the future there, right? They can see what it's going to be as opposed to what it is. So I think if you look at the fact that there are 16 of you, right? I'm married, what, four and a half years ago? 15 left. Now, how many of those 15 are entrepreneurs right now?
None.
Okay, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. The proof is in the pudding, so to speak. So I know you said that before you came here, did your research, right? So you prepared to come here. I'm going to call you out and say bullcrap, right? Because you can do your research all day about what's going to happen in China. But when you get here, as you said, your American friend thought she could go around the corner and get the hair products, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I knew when I came to China, they speak a different language, right? Mm-hmm. But I also thought, well, I could just go around the corner, 7-Eleven, and buy anything I want, talk to a guy. I didn't realize that. It didn't hit me, right? So what hit you when you came here that was a little bit odd or a little bit different?
Well, the culture. So research is more of business and economy. But what really hits you is the culture. I don't think you're ever prepared for the culture in China. But the culture is what was different in terms of the behavior, what was available and what wasn't available, how they interacted and how they view you as a person of color.
You know, I tell people that I think, well, I'm learning a lot about myself and minority, majority. Now, I say that because in the United States, you know, being black, you are the minority. And you, in a lot of ways, you treat like the minority, right? And when I first came to China, it was the first time this may sound bad, but you know me. It was the first time that I got an idea of how Caucasian Americans really thought about blacks, the minorities in the U.S. They felt they're superior. I say that because when I came to China, you see almost every foreigner feels superior to Chinese, even though they're in their country, right? And what that does, a lot of times it keeps them from establishing relationships with Chinese.
True.
Right? Now, you've been talking about how important it is to form a relationship. So in my eyes, you don't have that superiority complex. I found, one, that most minorities who come to China don't have that because they understand, you know, they understand a little bit more, right?
That's true.
So how are you able to avoid having that complex, right? And have you been able to really develop strong relationships with Chinese?
Okay. Well, I had to learn fast. And after my internship, I was thrown into a managerial position, which was what I was hoping for, because back in the U.S., I would never be a manager in charge of an entire department as a new graduate. But in China, you can. And I was put in charge of 10 Chinese men.
Now, what kind of company?
A chemical company.
Chemical company, okay.
So I was put in charge of 10 Chinese men who were older than I am. And that was a challenge. That was a challenge. It's such a big challenge because you learn in business school this, and you're from a developed country where this is how you motivate people. This is how you allow people to grow and make decisions. So when I was an intern, I was like, as soon as I'm a manager, I won't dictate to anyone. I'll allow them to make their own decisions. Don't even try it. So being in charge of persons and having to really come down a notch to be on their position, to understand them more, to see things from their point of view so you can able to work with them and lead them. I think that helped me a lot. You know, not stereotyping, right. Not thinking I'm inferior, because if you think you're inferior, you won't get to your group. So I had to really notch myself down and get away from my superior thinking, oh, things should be done like this in America. This is how you do it. Because it's not going to work. So you have to understand them, understand how to motivate them, understand how to lead, understand how to have them focus on what needs to be done. And I think that helped a lot. In terms of your second question, like really great friendships, I don't think you can have really, really great friendship with Chinese because of their culture. But you can still have good relationship, like a decent relationship where it's mutually beneficial.
Right. Well, you know, I'm going to challenge you there. Let me say that I agree with you. I think that in order to have, from my experience, in order to have deep relationships, it takes time. You know, it took for me, first of all, in Shanghai, it's much more difficult, okay? In Shenzhen or other non-tier one cities, smaller cities, where foreigners are a little more rare, right? The local people want to meet you, right? Mm-hmm. And I find if you sit down and talk with them for a while, when I say for a while, I mean talk to them for like 6-7 months, you know, and start sharing things, right? They start getting a little more personal with you. And maybe a year later, two things happen. One, they invite you for dinner. And two, they invite you to the house for dinner to meet their family. Once you meet their family, you're in.
Yeah, right? I have friends like those.
Yeah, you're in.
Like, their dad cooked for me. Even when it's winter, I know my sausage gets sent over that's homemade. Or this sent over. And the dad would tell the daughter, we haven't seen your friend in like 2 months. Tell her to come over for dinner.
Yeah.
So I have that type of relationship. But I still don't consider it deep because there's that level of disconnect in terms of culture. So we're from the same background, same challenges, same goals, same aspiration in the West. So we can really become very good friends. And for Chinese, the culture is different. The background, the aspiration, the needs, the goals are different. So I even though we're friends, good friends, I go to your home and I eat your food and I may even sleep over. It still it's different.
I think the last piece to my story is I had to consciously, you know, make it happen. You know, there were two people, I said, you know what, I'm going to develop a friendship with you, a deep one, deep one, deep one, deep one. And it took work. Now, luckily, with one guy, we're working for the same company, and we're on travel to Canada together, to Toronto, where my uncle lives, right? So I took him to my house, my aunt, they cooked a big Jamaican meal for him, and really took a minute.
Jamaican food, can you get anybody to be friends?
Right. So he and I are really, 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 really close. My closest friend in China, actually. Uh-huh. And another guy, So I think I had to make a conscious effort and keep talking, keep inviting them out, keep sharing with them. The more I shared over time, the more they shared. Because you're right, in the Chinese culture, you don't share a lot of your personal things, not even with your close friends.
Right.
So good.
I agree 100% with you, conscious effort, and that sums it up.
Yeah, you know, in Shanghai, and folks, I've said this before, Shanghai is a different breed because foreigners have been here so long that the Shanghai, local Shanghai, they're not impressed. They're not, you know, it's just every day. You know what, it's get out of my way, I'm trying to get you something. You know? So making a relationship, building a relationship is a lot more challenging.
It is.
Coming back to your business now, right? What's the main concern for your business?
Main concern is currently two things. Recruiting, retaining talented people, and second, funding. Because in the U.S. or even Jamaica, when you want to start a business, there are usually opportunities for funding, small business loan. You can get a loan for your personal bank. But there is none in China.
Nothing.
Right. So there's no funding here for foreign business entrepreneurs. So when you're doing it yourself. And it's difficult because you're in this position that is unique where you're in China. So the laws of business will dictate that you get funding in China. So you are expected to get funding in China, but there's no funding. Whereas you're not doing business in the US and it's very new that somebody is trying to do business in China. So in America, they're not going to give you funding because your company is not registered in the U.S.
Right.
And to get a loan, you have to be registered and paying taxes in the U.S.
Right.
And the same for Jamaica. You're not paying taxes in Jamaica.
Right.
So you're in that unique position. So that's one of the disadvantages of trying to be a forerunner as an entrepreneur because the rules haven't been updated or to the level that it accommodates for your new venture.
Now, I thought that when you form a business in China, you had to have X amount of months of rent in the bank. You had to have X amount of months. They asked you, what's your operating expense, right? And you had to show what you've had, say, a year of that in the bank before they give you a license. So is that the case?
It is the case, but we've been operating over 1 year. So no, I'm at the position where I want to take it to the level that I really want, but You need funding to be able to take it to that level.
Okay.
And your back is against the wall because of that unique position that you're in.
Okay. My audience may agree with me here. You know, a little over a year and a half ago, you were operating 2 days a week.
Right.
And now you're what, 6 days a week?
Five days a week.
So there is growth there.
There is growth.
Okay. You said there were two things that you make concerns. The one with the funding and the other retaining, finding and retaining talent.
Yes. So you're in China. How do you find persons in the U.S. that will be, you would say that they have the characteristics to fit into the demands of the Chinese society, especially when you're looking at working into a new business? It's like it's a startup. It's basically a startup. So you have two notches against you. One, you're in a startup, and one, you're in a new environment. Right. And how do you really get to know that person who you're recruiting? Because everybody looking for a better opportunity.
Right.
So they're going to put the shiny penny there. And yes, I will be able to do that. Yes, I'll be able to do that. But when you, Jamaica would say push comes to shove,
right,
it's a different story.
Right.
So how do you really get to know your recruit?
Right. I would assume it's almost, you have to really do a good selling job to get somebody from the U.S. to say, you're going to come to China.
No, it's not hard.
Really?
Because if you think about it, there's a hair shop on every corner, more than one on every corner.
Right.
So the market is very, very saturated. So it's easy to get people over. And you're looking, China is a new penny. Everything is China, China. So it's actually easy to get people to come.
Okay.
But the difficulty is getting the right person with
come.
The correct characteristic
that
will fit in the Chinese economy in a startup. And then the second part is recruiting. It's expensive to relocate. So you're talking about ticket. You're talking about putting their stuff away.
Right. Making sure
that rent, 4 months, rent, everything. And stylists are usually persons with a lot of disposable income.
Right.
So you're looking at least 5,000 to 8,000 for relocation.
And
that's a lot of disposable income.
Okay.
So it's that's
a very surprising answer, because I know my black girlfriends, right? You know my friends back home. When we talk about coming to visit me, right? They say, "Colin, you're in China. You're tripping." And that's it. Right? I still haven't been convinced that Shanghai is this big bustling city.
It is.
So why don't you now? It's not stereotypical. You know, you talked about your style from Kenya. I know in Africa, a lot of parts of Africa are still developing. Right? Shanghai is developed, but it's still developing.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that they'd be able to assimilate to the environment here a little easier.
Yes,
right?
They do.
And I would assume that they are more hungry, quite frankly, than Americans, right?
Yes.
So do you find that that's a better resource for recruits?
Okay. A better resource, but for what? In terms of, in Canada, they're a developing country, so their techniques aren't as developed as what we would be accustomed to in the first world. So from Kenya, it's great for braiders. But even my recruit, she was good at braiding, but not good at hair maintenance, how to take care of the hair, how to ensure that it remains healthy, even though it's under a braid.
Okay.
So that's the cups that's kind of difficult. Like, yes, they're hungry, but can they do what they need to be done?
Yeah, you know, I said earlier, I've only had maybe 5 haircuts in China. The first 3, I had to go to Hong Kong. And a brother there, he's an African brother, right? And a brother there cut my hair with a razor and a comb. Never seen it happen before. He had put the razor on the back of the comb and I didn't know, right? I was like, why is he combing my hair such a long time? And I was like, wait a second, he's cutting my hair. It worked, right? But it was a different sort of technique, right? Very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. So before I get to you giving your advisement, right? I do want to ask you one question that I'm going to assume your parents or your friends ask you,
mm-hmm.
right? So being a business owner somewhat ties you to Shanghai, right? So has your salon changed your idea of how long you want to stay here?
Well, I never had a timeline to begin with. So I think that's an advantage and probably that's a disadvantage. But I never really thought about how long I would be here for. I do know now that I'll be here for a while if I want to see this through and ensure that it's successful.
Do you want to see it through and ensure that it's successful?
Yes, I do.
Why? Why?
It's my personality. I cannot accept failure. I usually don't accept failure. And for me to leave it, then I don't have the control. Mm. So I want to, at the end, see It's my first venture.
Right.
It's my baby.
Right.
I want to see it grow into a teenager. I go off to college, and I'm like proud.
Okay, so I'm going to continue that theme there because you said this is your first venture, which means that you have plans for a second one. So at some point, you may pass this off, right?
Right.
So, what would you say is a? Oh, no, you're clearly a success, right? Mm-hmm. What are your keys to success?
My keys to success.
I'm sorry, let me interrupt you. Mm-hmm. Your keys to success in China.
Okay. In China is, in China is being flexible. If you're not flexible and willing to accept things for what they are and working with things, then you just can't stay here. So being flexible, being accommodating, and being patient.
Well, Jamaican women aren't patient, so how do you...
Well, the funny thing is, I'll give you a joke. I was such an impatient person. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10 being impatient, I was at 20.
Mm.
I was that impatient, and every day I got up, and this is a true story, and I prayed to God. I was like, God, I know this is not good, especially going out in the workplace. Please make me a better person. Please let me be more patient. And then I got landed in China, and I was like, good God, was I that bad? And China has tested me. I'm still working towards being the most patient person in the world. But I can say on a scale of 1 to 10, where I was at 20, no, I'm about 8 or 7. Yes.
Let me tell you, I totally understand. I had the impatient thing also. I also had the yelling thing. I was an arguer.
Arguing, and you're raising your voice.
And I was frustrated, right? But China has cured me of that. Because the first thing I realized when I was managing, you know, not saying I was yelling at my team, right? But I've noticed that if you raise your voice or if you get upset, it doesn't change anything.
Over.
It does not change anything.
They become more stubborn.
Yeah, it does not change anything. You know, whereas I might be looking for a healthy debate or healthy whatever, it doesn't happen.
No.
And as far as being patient, I am surprised by how calm and patient I am now. I think it had more to do with the fact that things just are less stressful here. You know, to quite for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, if I'm on an escalator, I mean, my audience knows my biggest frustration with being on an escalator and people stand on both sides and don't walk. Right? So
that gets to me. No.
Not a big deal. Okay, so the details for your keys. Your keys to success were patience,
perseverance, and flexibility. Being flexible. And also here, focus. Why? I think I'll put focus at number two because China is like a shiny new coin, especially Shanghai. There's so much to do. Mm. And I can tell you, I did waste away those 3 years. Mm-mm-mm. There is so many things to do, so many attraction.
Yeah.
And I always say, because you move to this city where everybody is outside their comfort zone and outside their family, it makes it super easy to make friends because everybody is looking for that family here.
Right.
So you get pulled in so many different directions that it's very easy to lose your focus. So if you're not focused on achieving a goal, you will waste away your sojourn to China like so easily. So if you're not focused, you won't be able to accomplish any of your goals.
What advice would you give another person that wishes to develop and launch a business that also caters to a smaller subset of already small section of the population? I assume do research, right?
Do your research. Definitely do your research. And have it in the back of your mind that you are in the business for the long haul and not the short haul.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're focusing on niche market, it takes time to build your clientele. And then it takes time to have that repeat clientele to maintain it. So number one is have it in the back of your mind that, hey, it's at least 3 years in this business. And two, don't be narrow-minded. You may start looking at a subset, but keep an open mind wherein if you see an opportunity popping up that you are able to provide service outside of that niche market, keep an open mind. Right. Jump for it. Go for it. You don't only have to focus on what you started out with.
Be ready to service everybody.
Be ready to service whatever falls in your lap, because that will be your key to success.
Okay. What does the future hold for Studio Ebony or Ebony Studio? Studio Ebony. What does the future hold for Studio Ebony?
A future, well, many surprises. Overall, though, I hope that it holds a future where we improve our services, we improve our offering to our clientele, and we become the household name for hair care service, not only for the Afro clients in Shanghai, but for those who are looking for something different and unique.
Hmm. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Where did the name come from?
The place that we were originally located, the name was Studio.
Okay.
So in order to differentiate, I just added Ebony, because that was not the original name. So Studio Ebony came about as a form of existence. And that, again, goes back to flexibility in China.
Okay.
You can't just have something in your mind and then this is it, because it never works.
Okay, so now I want you to pitch, right? So glad to say my audience is worldwide. I have a wide range finally. So with that, if there's somebody, a young lady sitting right now, let's say sitting right now in Brazil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of Afro-Caribbean descent, and they're coming to Shanghai. Sell her. Sell her. Give us your pitch. Right?
Well, I have to say to you, we not only service Afro-Caribbean, Brazilian, we
you
service
must be
Brazilian.
Ready to service everybody.
And we do. We have quite a bit of Brazilian clientele.
Okay.
So, but okay, my pitch would be, you're coming to Shanghai, it's the unknown, but the known is Studio Ebony. They will know exactly how to treat your hair in the manner that you have come accustomed to in your own home country.
Hmm. This is a personal question, folks, because I'm doing the interview. When will you have a consistent barber? I'll tell you why. I saw you, Wei Xing, right, who said, you have a barber this weekend, and I said, you know, I should go. But what good is going for one good haircut if I can't have another, right?
He's not coming every Saturday.
Every Saturday?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he's here every Saturday for the past 4 weeks.
Oh, he's going to be here?
Yeah, he's going
to
be
you
here this
Saturday.
You need
to put that in your gentleman, because trust me, us men talk, okay? No, I'm so serious. There's nothing worse than brothers getting with a month no haircut, right? Right? So put that in your, let them know that the barber is here.
Every Saturday.
Yes.
I do have a permanent barber. But again, it all depends on visas and stuff. So I have a permanent barber just trying to get him here for in a month or two that will be here every day, 5 days a week.
Okay. Well, on behalf of myself and my audience, thank you very much for taking the time to allow me to come into your wonderful studio. And I got to say, it looks just like a studio back home. The only thing missing, I would say, from a salon, right, would be a TV and posters of half-naked Carl Thompson's.
So. Don't worry, those are coming. We're having a photo shoot in a couple of days. So then we have that. I'm not sure about the half-naked.
Okay, so thank you for your time.
Well, Colin, it was my absolute pleasure to be on the program To the East, My Brother. I enjoyed talking about the salon. I enjoy sharing my challenges and my success with your audience. And I do hope it gives person out there the courage to go out and do something new or do something that's scaring them, but will put them at a position that they grow into something more than they expected.
Tremendous. And audience, you can't see this, but throughout the entire interview, her face just lit up as she's talking about this, which shows passion. Passion, right? Yeah, yeah. So thank you. And folks, we'll talk to you again.
Bye.